Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
After listening to Savage for a short time, I found a long-lost uncle in my life. He is always ready for a fight, but kind and wise. This book, like all of them, is tightly written, and Dr. Savage reduces complex ideas to compact, understandable prose. I see more and more red-blooded American youth waking to the generational theft happening before our eyes. The young and old need direction and moral support, and Dr. Savage provides a bounty. Proud to be an American isn't just a stupid bumper sticker made at China. Live it.
America has been invaded from within by enemies who want to drag us all down because they feel we deserve it. Savage has the solutions to saving us from these progressives. I prefer to call them communists. I am addicted to Savage's radio show because he tells the truth. Sometimes it even hurts me to listen, but I listen every night. This book is similar to what he says in his show. When it is written down and in book form, it is extremely powerful. It's the how-to manual on taking America back from the evil ones looking to destroy us. Savage documents the people and the plans
all
they
right,
have.
That's pretty good, guys. Thank you very much. These are some of the reviews. You know, this is Fleet Week weekend in the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome to the program. And the Blue Angels will be flying. They're practicing this afternoon. They're going to be flying tomorrow and over the weekend and all sorts of wonderful events. And here we go for the local newspaper puts up their standard old lady comment. Ooh, those noisy Blue Angels are here again. Put your earplugs on. The fascists are flying their jets overhead. 99% of the people come out cheering. They just love it. And a few percent of the vermin who write the newspapers and run the media out here, they just can't stand the Blue Angels. You know what it's really about? It's not anti-military. It is straight-out jealousy. These people can't even drive their Priuses in a straight line, let alone fly a Piper Cub. They're just simply jealous of the young men and their flying machines. But I'll tell you what they're clucking about. The same newspaper that sneers at the Blue Angels in the San Francisco Bay Area is glowing over a chef who just came in from Copenhagen. And he's on a book tour, don't you know? Now, I wouldn't mention this except for the laugh lines that are in this. The chef comes in from Copenhagen, and his restaurant, which I won't name because I don't intend to ever go there, was named the world's best. Now, how can a restaurant be the world's best? I'll let you figure out how this guy became the world's best chef when I tell you what he puts into his food. Remember, he celebrates Nordic food, and he celebrates locally sourced Nordic ingredients, muskox, hay, and Icelandic moss. Now, I ask you, would you ever eat muskox, hay, and Icelandic moss? And then we read what he made while he was visiting the local restaurant. The genius nestled old unwanted carrots next to chamomile and basted them in goat butter over just the right heat for more than an hour, turning slowly and basting some more until they took on a flavor he'd never imagined possible. The next line is the real screamer. He believes hot cuisine is taking a turn away from the decadent. Now, excuse me. This is a turn away from the decadent? Cooking goat butter over old carrots and chamomile for over an hour? That's their idea of the best food on earth? Now you understand why I love the Bay Area so much. Without it, where would I be? Look what they made me do. They made me so angry for so many years that I produced one best-selling radio show after another, and now one best-selling book after another. How could it get any better than this? Welcome to the Savage Nation. I was on a show this morning in St. Louis with Dana Loesch. She's a local host. And a man called in. He said he went to his local border store in a suburb of St. Louis, and he couldn't find the book. He went in the back. The guy showed it to him. Was underneath in the back, blah, blah, blah. Spoke to the manager. Manager says, blah, blah, blah. So he says to the manager, I thought it's a new release. It should be up front. He said, yes, but we have discretion. sometimes we don't put on new releases up front. We put them where we want. I said, isn't that wonderful? So I thought I would report this to Dana Lash, sorry. I thought we'd report this to you out there and ask you, have you seen the book where it should be? I want to ask you that. I want to get you as my army out there. I want you to be the cops, the bookstore police. I'm turning you into the bookstore police. Since Obama has the thought police, Michael Savage now has an army of bookstore police. And we're going to report the activities of bookstores around America to the owners at the corporate headquarters. And any one of the green-haired, mean-faced green-haired women who are hiding my books will be heard from. Believe me. So let's begin the fun here. Oh, by the way, go to michaelsavage.com. There's a little TV thing of me and Teddy on a San Diego station. He looks fabulous, I got to tell you. The offers are flowing in for Teddy as of right now. Offers from as far away as China. They would like to cook him in northern China in a new Szechuan dish, but I have said no thank you. San Diego, Dakota, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Michael? I love your show.
Thank you.
Diego. I live in San Diego, and I went to five different Barnes & Nobles in the North County, San Diego. And
what happened?
All of them were sold out.
When? When were they sold out?
Today. I just got them to send me a brand new one for the internet price, actually, and they didn't have anything advertising it.
I don't understand this. What is there, 3,000 Barnes & Noble stores, and they order like 15 copies each, and they're all gone?
Exactly. I told every cashier that I said, I'm glad it sold out. People need to be reading it, and they just didn't even...
Well, that means that we've sold a lot of books already in the first 2 days. Keep it up. I don't know what's going to happen if they can't get books back fast enough. I really don't know how these things work, but you win a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty to give away to a man in uniform. I know down in San Diego there are plenty of them. Try to give it to a real combat veteran, not one of the guys behind the scenes who is persecuting our fighting men. You know what I mean, Dakota? There's a big difference.
Yes, Michael, yes. And I think...
I mean, if you see a young guy coming back who's actually been a combat veteran, you know, try to give him the book. Don't give it to one of the guys sitting there seeing if they can catch him on some charges.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not.
All right, stay on the line. You're getting a free book. Everybody's a winner today. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Oh, what a day it's been. Nothing extreme, just watching the Blue Angels practice is enough for me. I watch those magnificent young men in their flying machines, and I wonder at the greatness of America and the weakness of our leaders. That's all I can tell you. A story came out today that really shocked me, a news story. One of the schmucks, I mean, one of the leaders that we have he's not a Defense Department, intelligence agency, whatever. Where's that story, Beowulf? We said we got to be ready to, they can't have 100% batting average, we're probably going to get hit. And we'll bounce back. Where's that story? Whoever he is, some Schmendrick that Obama picked to be head of National Internal Reverse Double Intelligence Counter Productive Intelligence, a guy whose last known job was probably working at Brown University in the admissions department, is now the head of counterintelligence for the Obama administration. He said, America can take another 9/11 and survive it. Now, I was furious when I read that because he shouldn't be telling me that. He should be telling the enemy that if you so much as set off a firecracker, we'll immolate your nation, you bastard. Don't even dare tread on me. You set off a firecracker in America, we'll burn your house down. I never saw anything like this. Am I alone in this? What is going on in my country that the head of national counterintelligence, whatever, who has no experience in intelligence nor in counters, maybe he has experience in counters, working at Macy's, says, oh, yeah, we can take another 9/11 and we can come back for it. We're strong. That's the latest watchword. They reinvented themselves, and now it's, oh, we're a strong country. We can come back from an attack. They're all saying the same thing now. Is that the right thing for a defense agency to be saying at a time like this? I don't believe so. I think that they should go after the terrorist in his homeland. I think we should attack them first. I think we should immolate the entire tribal region of Pakistan. I think we should unleash a neutron bomb on the tribal region of Pakistan after giving them 24 hours notice that we're going to immolate the entire tribal area. We want the women and children out. And let all the brave terrorists stay there behind and then just drop one. I'm sick of this. And you know what else is going on? What's more, We didn't hear a peep out of Gates and Mullen when Obama surrendered our anti-missile defense shield in Poland and the Czech Republic. You remember that? Or when Congress cut back on funding for future combat systems, which is an essential program. We didn't hear a word from Gates and Mullen over the recently announced, quote, almost 20% cut in the dedicated forces they could allocate to respond to a weapon of mass destruction attack on U.S. soil. This is in my book on page 263. And the reason I'm reading it to you is because I remember every speech. I remember every policy debate. I have them all in here, and you mustn't forget them. I do this for a living. Remember, I do this for a living, and I have a memory like an elephant. I caught everything that the Obamas have done and everything the Obamas want to do, and they're destroying our ability to survive as a nation. And I ask, why won't these men stand up to this radical president who continues to impoverish the military and compromise the ability for America to defend herself against those who would want to wipe us off the face of the earth? Make no mistake about it. The trickle-up poverty here is the weakening of America's capacity to defend ourselves and the impoverishment of the fighting spirit, once the centerpiece of the U.S. military. Now listen to this. All because of the mental disorder of liberalism exhibited by far left's influence on the top brass and Barack Hussein Obama's radical policies of appeasement. One of the clearest examples of the Obama administration's efforts to undermine our military is the new rules of engagement, which are killing our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, literally. Now, when I come back, I don't think you've ever heard them. I don't think you've read them. But I recorded them, and I wrote them down. They are memorialized forever in trickle-up poverty on page 264. And I want you, when I read them, to imagine you're on a night mission. You're using high-tech weapons. You have the best combat training in the world. You're sent to Afghanistan to fight the throwbacks. And now you're told the following about your mission. Wait until you hear what Obama has done to our fighting men right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We are celebrating Nordic cuisine today on the Savage Nation. That's what San Francisco is interested in. Musk oxen, hay, and Icelandic moss. No wonder the Nordic women are fleeing and running to Paris. At least they get men who eat beef, for God's sakes. They don't even want to date the men who eat musk oxen. So did you want to hear who the head of counterintelligence is? You're not going to believe this. Michael Leiter. I'm sure he's a fine man. He is a former law clerk to one of the most, well, Stephen Breyer, does that ring a bell? After law school, Mr. Leiter served as a law clerk to Associate Justice Stephen G. Breyer of the Supreme Court of the United States and to Chief Judge Michael Boudin of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit. So he's a member of the RDDB Brigade. And, it just gets worse by the second. Director of the United States National Counterterrorism Center. So when I say to you Obama's attack on the military and our national security, we have a man who says we could absorb a terror attack and bounce back. He's, in other words, he's a Stepford wife of Obama who said that. The great man said it. Now this man's repeating it. Now imagine you're told the following about your mission in Afghanistan. Your military, you're sent there. You have the best high-tech weapons on the planet. You're sent into Afghanistan, and here's what Obama told you can and cannot do. Page 264 of Trickle Up Poverty. No night or surprise searches. No surprise searches? So after the terrorist shoots your friend and blows his head off from behind the mosque, you can't surprise him and catch him with the smoking gun? What, do you have to get a letter from Obama? I'm not making this up. Villagers have to be warned prior to searches. That's a scream. The Afghan National Army or the Afghan National Police must accompany U.S. units on searches so they can shoot our men in the back. U.S. soldiers may not fire at the enemy unless the enemy is preparing to fire first. I told you, you didn't believe any of this. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm reading you something very radical. I don't know if you've ever seen this in your newspapers. I am reading to you the rules of engagement that Barack Hussein Obama has in place in Afghanistan. Only women can search women. U.S. forces cannot engage the enemy if civilians are present. Now, you know from the situation in the Middle East, in Israel, that the terrorists have always hidden behind their women's skirts and fired at Israelis from behind women. That's their standard operating procedure. That's their manual. That's their counterinsurgency manual. Troops can fire at an insurgent if they catch him placing an IED, but not if insurgents are walking away from an area where explosives have been laid, reference 7. I'm not making this up. Nothing imaginary about those rules of engagement. Troops can fire at an insurgent if they catch him placing an impoverished explosive, I'm sorry, an improvised explosive device, but not if insurgents are walking away from an area where explosives have been laid. According to the Washington Times, that's just a partial list of what our brave servicemen and women actually must do while rooting out the Taliban. Now tell me that that's not absolute madness. Does the American military really need the ANA and or the ANI, ANP babysitting or highly trained, perfectly capable troops every time they search a mud hut? How many of them are Taliban by night? What's wrong with conducting surprise searches? Isn't the element of surprise key to most victories? I'm asking on page 265. What's more, if our soldiers are required to go door-to-door as if they're selling Avon Cosmetics to warn villagers of a pending search, doesn't that give the enemy time to pack their explosives and slip out the back? Why aren't nighttime searches permitted? Are we afraid of interrupting a terrorist in the middle of a bomb-making session? Is it any wonder our troops are bogged down? Is it any wonder we're not making progress against an enemy? Page 265. I have given you something that no newspaper in America other than the Washington Times published sometime in the last year. This is revolutionary evidence that Obama is at war with our military and does not want to win in Afghanistan. If this is not enough of a reason for you to pick up this book, what is?
Savage.
Republicans, they are fired up. They're mobilized. They see an opportunity to take back the House, maybe take back the Senate. And if they're successful in doing that, they've already said they're going to go back to the same policies that were in place during the Bush administration. And that means that we are going to have just hand-to-hand combat up here on Capitol Hill.
So the president has tougher rules of engagement for our men in Afghanistan than for the Democrats on Capitol Hill. He's given the Democrats on Capitol Hill the right to go into hand-to-hand combat against anyone who's pro-American, while our troops in Afghanistan have their both hands behind tied behind their back. If you just joined the Savage Nation, I read the rules of engagement, which will explain why we are losing in Afghanistan. And if you think that this is funny business, then read into a bookstore and read pages 264 and 265. And then come out, call the show and tell me that I'm wrong by saying this war is unsustainable. Unless the rules of engagement are changed, we've lost already. I'm going to read something to you from a man who's out there. In an article entitled, Strict Rules Slowing Offensive, Troops Say, the reporter covering a battle in Afghanistan swerves into the ugly truth of this untenable situation. Here's what he wrote. If a man emerges from a Taliban hideout after shooting erupts, U.S. troops say they cannot fire at him if he is not seen carrying a weapon or if they did not personally watch him drop one. What this means, some contend, is that a militant can fire at them, then set aside his weapon and walk freely out of a compound, possibly toward a weapon cache in another location. Now tell me that that isn't crazy, Mr. Obama. Tell me that that's not a formula for disaster, Dianne Feinstein. Why must our men hold their fire, Jerry Brown? Isn't killing the enemy the whole point, Barbara Boxer? Not so, as this reporter goes on to explain. NATO and Afghan military officials say killing militants is not the goal of a three-day-old attack to take control of this Taliban stronghold in southern Afghanistan. The more important focus is to win public support. Now, I write, if we're intent on playing with the enemy as some sort of goodwill gesture, where does that leave our troops? You can read this for yourself. You know, all I can say is that Obama's war on the military and on national security is coming home to roost. It's coming home to roost because of the meltdown of our economy, and it's all related to Obama's Marxist-Leninist roots. And I think I'm going to talk about that in a minute on the Savage Nation by telling you a homey, friendly story from my childhood and then making a bigger comparison to the politics of the day, because everyone likes my family stories. Sacramento Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Tell me what's going on with you in the book.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, all the stuff you're talking about, but good news out of San Francisco. I called Borders, and they I asked if they had trickle-up poverty, and the guy on the phone, I waited a few minutes, and then he asked me if I wanted to put it on hold, and I said, well, is there that many copies left? He's like, well, it'd be a good idea to put it on hold, so I said, sure.
Now, what store, Borders in San Francisco or Sacramento?
San Francisco. I use your word, San Francisco.
There's actually a Borders in San Francisco carrying the book?
I suppose. I'm on hold.
How did they let it into the city? I'm surprised the mayor didn't put up some kind of wall to keep the book out, or they didn't start burning it yet. Joe, I'm sending you a free copy of TUP. People should have TUP parties in their houses. They should get five people together who have the book. Why don't you put notes in bookstores on the readers of Trickle Up Poverty, email, blah, 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 and get together and have read-ins together. New York, WOR, John, what's your situation out there?
The same thing happened to me at a Borders in Long Island, as that gentleman you read. The manager said that they kept the book in the back room. They didn't want to put it out because they didn't want to offend anybody.
I want the name of the store. Is it one the other?
The saddest thing is they said, he's rude. He's not like the wall banger. I said, well, the wall banger is not a true conservative. That's why so many people mistake what the wall banger
is. Who is the clerk? How does this minimum wage clerk have the right to override a corporate decision? He doesn't like me personally, so he puts my book in the toilet? That's disgraceful, John. It really is. Did you finally get a copy?
Actually, no. So I had my year-old daughter with me, and she...
Well, you got a free copy. Now, John, let me ask you something else. Well, never mind. I'm just sending you a free copy of the book. Stay on the line. That's all. So, you want some more rules of engagement? No, I'm going to tell you a family story because people like warm and fuzzy. Because I don't want to be rude. I want to be more like wall banger. Wait, let me go get a hammer and some wallboard so I can give you the sound of the wall banger. You'll hear me putting wallboard up. When I was a little boy, maybe between the ages of 6 to 9, I'd go on long rides with my father across the bridges into Manhattan to work in his antique store. His shop was on the Lower East Side of New York, where he sold clocks and figurines, mainly 19th century French bronzes. Well, that was his specialty. I learned a lot about art because Dad put me to work cleaning off the patina. The nouveaux who were buying them wanted them to look shiny like gold. So down in the musty basement, I'd work long hours scrubbing off the brown or black patina. After they were cleaned up, I'd bring up the figurines to the store for my father to sell. Glad to be out of that dank basement for a few minutes, I'd smile and linger before I headed back to the dungeon. I'd watch the customers coming in and out of the store looking at this and that. They'd see something they liked, ask my father the price, and he'd tell them. Sometimes they'd pay it. Sometimes they winced as if biting down on a bit of raw garlic. That's funny. They'd shake their heads and say they couldn't afford his price. Whether they could afford it or just trying to work my dad over, I didn't know. I took it for face value that they didn't have enough money. On the long ride home, I had time to think about many things, including the exchange between my father and the customers. That's when a new idea struck me. I thought how nice the world would be if the vegetable man could give me his vegetables and I could give him some of my father's merchandise in exchange. Or how the butcher could give me meat to take home to my mother, and in exchange I'd give him a lamp for my father's store. Or how the butcher might give the vegetable man a lamb chop, and the vegetable man could give him some cucumbers. I started to wonder, why wouldn't such a system work? Then we wouldn't need any money, and everybody would be happy. But then again, I was only a child. Awakening from my reflections on the ride home, I came to understand that not all people want to work, and not all people will work as hard as their neighbor to get that lamb chop. Some will refuse to work, yet still expect something for nothing. And that's the essence of communism, of socialism. Millions of people living in this country right now do not work and yet still gain an awful lot for nothing on the backs of the taxpayers. Yes, they're gaming the system with the help of the government. As I grew older, I watched in disbelief as the handout crowd swelled in size during the mid-60s under the light socialist revolution of Lyndon Baines Johnson and his creation of the Great Society. I'm sure President Johnson's intentions to end poverty were good. I can't say for sure. I never met the man. But codifying socialized medicine for welfare recipients, known as Medicaid, continues to be a fiasco. His dalliance with socialism forever changed America, and not for the better. Due to President Johnson's socialist experiment to end poverty, American taxpayers have been forced to pick up the tab, spending trillions of their hard-earned dollars over the decades. In effect, Lyndon Johnson took from the middle class to give to the poor. Did his bailout program to end poverty work? Hardly. If anything can be said, the cycle of poverty in America has grown even worse. Which leads me to Barack Obama. Here's a man who, like President Johnson, is represented as a modern-day Robin Hood figure. You know, the great equalizer, taking from the rich to give to the poor. That's the popular image of him, prepackaged and sold with a slick Madison Avenue-style marketing to the masses. Obama got into office claiming he wanted to spread the wealth around. He flew into Washington like Superman, as if he were the ultimate righter of wrongs and champion of the downtrodden. And the sheeple bought the cartoon version based upon their first impressions. Who can forget the excitable ejaculation by one enraptured supporter who, after listening to Obama, bubbled, "I never thought this day would ever happen. I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. If I help Obama, he's going to help me." But during the 08 election cycle, I wasn't buying Obama's grandiose rhetoric of hope and change. I dug deeper. I studied how he was educated. I saw what was important to him. I focused on the people he associated with. In short, Michael Savage did his homework, which is why I knew Obama was no Robin Hood. The opposite is true. I warned you Barack Obama was a stealth candidate. I saw through him. I saw the red flags of socialism. Is Obama a Marxist-educated mole? I maintain that Barack Hussein Obama is a naked Marxist. More than that, he's a Marxist with a Leninist complex. Does that sound far-fetched? Why would I make such a provocative claim? What evidence, if any, exists to back me up? Plenty. I realize that the mainstream media laugh off my assertion because most of them are so far gone down that road they're unaware of their own conversion. These phonies don't know socialism from sausage. The fact of the matter is that Obama's indoctrination began in 1970 at the impressionable age of 10. That's when his maternal grandfather, Stanley Dunham, introduced young Obama to radical activist Frank Marshall Davis in Hawaii. I'm not sure why Grandpa Dunham thought that it would be a good idea to connect his grandson with a communist, but he did. I would have thought a grandfather would have protected his grandchild from such a radical influence, someone whose sympathies didn't line up with America's best interests. Obama's half-sister explained, "Our grandfather thought Mr. Davis was a point of connection, a bridge, if you will, to the larger African-American experience for my brother. If anything, Davis appears to be a different kind of bridge, a bridge to the dangerous doctrines of communism." You want me to go on about this? There can be no doubt that Frank Davis embraced communist views. The FBI had assembled a thick file on Frank Davis's participation in writings about and speeches regarding his interests in communism dating back to 1931. According to one FBI report, Davis has been active in affairs of the Hawaii Civil Liberties, a communist front, and occupies the position of chairman of the Legal Action Committee of this organization. It's all in my book. It's all about Obama's beginnings, but it gets worse. Why does any of this matter to you? Page 35. As I've said, Barack Obama is a naked Marxist, a classic red diaper doper baby, which is why in the pages ahead we'll explore the poison seeds of socialism planted in Obama's education and philosophy. We'll examine Obama's affiliations, his choice of czars and inner circle, and put his strategy and actions under the Savage microscope. Along the way, you'll discover that for decades, Obama has had friendly associations with communists and terrorists, ranging from Communist Party USA member Frank Marshall Davis in his youth in Hawaii, to communist terrorists Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn in Chicago when he was doing community organizing and running for political office. You say, well, I've heard all of that before. Well, you haven't heard the rest of it, and you're going to hear the rest of it or read the rest of it on your own. It gets worse by the second. And I will tell you all over again what you're experiencing in this country right now is the baby phase of Marxism Economics 101. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Lillian, in New York City on line 5, welcome from WOR. What's on your mind?
I couldn't find your book, so I went to the cashier. She looked it up on the computer. She said, we don't have it. So I asked for the manager. I picked up about $450 worth of books, and I held them in my arms. When the manager came out, I said, do you have Trickle of Poverty by Michael Savage? She said, no. I said, how do you know? You didn't even look it up. She says, we don't have that book. So I opened my arms. I let all those expensive books fall on the floor. I walked out, and I called all my friends. And all day, people were calling, asking for your book. I called back about 3 or 4 hours later. I said, do you have Trickle of Poverty by? And I didn't even get your name out. And the person that answered the phone said, "What? We never had that book. We don't have it now, and we're never going to get it." And she hung up on me.
Lillian, what's...
It's in the number if people want to call.
No, don't put the phone number out because this person's going to get fired. I'm sending it on to my publisher because they spent a lot of money buying tens of thousands of copies, I'm sure. And if these people are undermining the corporation, let the corporation deal with it, Cheryl, Lillian. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. God bless you for being my representative out there. My representatives are my people, Lillian. This is what you have to do. You know, we're facing a censorship of this kind, not only in the bookstores, but in the newspapers, on the television sets, including Fox News, where my message will not be received. And it's only the millions of listeners of this show who can make a difference. And you are making a difference, Lillian. You have nerve. You have guts.
Well, I call every day asking for it, and all my friends do. And we're not going to stop until they get that book.
Lillian, you got a copy. Stay on the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Okay, let me level with you. Let me tell you what's at stake. The first week's numbers are the most important for the... When this is posted next week, probably on Drudge, where he lists the number one, number two, number three book, if you let the comedian's book be number one, or the old hack from the Washington Post who's told you the same old story over and over again, then people are going to figure that, well, you know what? This whole conservative thing, it's not really that big. The Tea Parties aren't that organized. Michael Savage's book didn't even come in number one or number two. It's number three. If you intend to buy somebody a copy of this book for Christmas, I'm going to ask you to do it this week. Yeah, it'll be in the stores for Christmas. I'm telling you, I need you to do it this week. So don't labor. I want you to get the book this week. The most important week, week one. Because if we can get it up to the top of the list this week, it's going to stay pretty high up for a couple of weeks. If you let it slip, we're finished. It's like a horse race. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to keep going over and over about it. There's an awful lot at stake here. Of course I'm not like Mr. Nice Guy on Fox News. Of course I'm a big C, not a little C. Of course I'm a true independent as opposed to a water boy for the Republican Party. Of course I'm banned from Fox News, where the leprechauns reign. The corned beef and cabbage crowd runs it like the Westies did on the west side of Manhattan. They may as well be the Westies from the west side of Manhattan, Fox News today. It's like a... But nevertheless, I need you to go out and buy it. You don't need them. You can go into your bookstore and demand the damn thing. Or buy it on Amazon, and I need you to do it this week. I need you to do something for me and for America. That's all there is to it. Say, oh, you're going to benefit from it. Who are you kidding? What malarkey are you pulling? I'm not going to listen to you anymore. You're just, you know, hawking a book. Like everybody else, you just want a quick buck. I would lie to you if I said I didn't want a success. I would lie to you if I didn't say that there's some vanity involved. Of course those things are true. I'm a human being. But I've got to tell you again. I'm at a stage of my life where I pay an awful lot in taxes, state, local, and federal. And this is not going to change my lifestyle. I'm not going to buy a new car or a new house as a result of this book. If it sold 100,000 or a million copies, it wouldn't change my lifestyle. But it will change the course of human events. And I got to put you on an inside track again. When I presented this idea to the publisher at Morrow back a year ago or so, whenever it was, I said to them, I envision a cover where I'm holding a poster that says Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security, where I'm holding it. And they said, what's your concept? I said, my concept is the book becomes a walking billboard that millions or hundreds of thousands of Americans, whatever the number may be, walk around with the book, and it's like a walking advertisement against this socialist, communist, pan-Leninist president, period. In other words, I want to make you a walking billboard. How do you like that? Yeah, I'm actually going to use you. You know, many of you have said, Savage, we've got your back. Savage, with the Savage Army. Well, now is the time for the army to start marching. I need you to start marching with this book in your hand. I don't care whether you're in Minnesota, Manhattan, Los Angeles, Seattle, Miami. It doesn't matter where you are. Think about the effect of a cover that says Trickle Up Poverty. Everybody can understand that. It says it all. And I'm not going to say anymore. I'm not going to sell this book to you anymore. I want you to go out and buy it. Minnesota Mary, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi there, Dr. Savage. Thank you so much for taking my call this afternoon. I just want to tell you of my experience over buying your book in northeastern Minnesota at the Barnes & Noble in Duluth. I had the book set aside Tuesday afternoon because I live out of town. So I walk into the store yesterday afternoon, walk in the front doors of the place, see a huge display of all liberal books. Your book is not to be seen.
Well, that's right. That's the area that elected the comedian, the clown, Al Franken, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Sure. The clown they like.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Five stars and five barks for Michael and Teddy. Michael has done an outstanding body of work in dissecting what is wrong with this current administration, the direction they want to take us, and how much we've to lose, and how little to gain if they succeed. God bless you, Michael, for being the voice of reason in these interesting times we live in.
Oh, that's it. Thank you very much, another reviewer of the Savage Nation. Look, I don't know how much you want to hear this, but we can move on to just the news. There's plenty of news out there, but every time I read a news story, it leads me right back to my book. U.S. could absorb a terror attack and bounce back, says a so-called counterterrorism center head, Michael Leiter. He said, we're not going to have a perfect batting average. It's important that Americans understand that. It's important that we approach this with national resilience. And he says, we won't be defeated. He said, we can take it again. Well, that's easy to say when you have a bunker to go to in Washington. And he's just copying, like a good wife would, what his leader, President Obama, said. We can absorb a terrorist attack. We'll do everything we can to prevent it. But even a 9/11, even the biggest attack ever, said Obama, we absorbed it and we're stronger. We're stronger? You think we're stronger after 9/11 or weaker? I read to you in the last hour the rules of engagement that our poor men have to face in Afghanistan. And you wonder why they're dragging it, the war is dragging on and on and on. You understand why the war is dragging on? It's because we have a weak president surrounded by weak followers who will do anything the man says. I mean, that's what they're supposed to do. You understand that. But let's get past what you already know. If it's old news, I'm not going to repeat it. It gets boring to me. So what's new? Tell me what's new. How else do we explain this supine behavior of Obama? Well, let's go back. Here are some of the apologies of his apology tour. Apology to Europe speech in Strasbourg, France, 432009. He said, in America, there's a failure to appreciate Europe's leading role in the world. There's been times, said Obama, where America has shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive. You see, I have memorialized everything this man has done so far so that you make no mistake about what he's going to do next. Number two, apology to the Muslim world, interview with Al Arabiya Television, 12709. He said, my job to the Muslim world is to communicate that Americans are not your enemy. We sometimes make mistakes. We have not been perfect. Number three, apology to the Summit of the Americas, addressed to the Summit of the Americas, Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago, 51709. Here's what he said. While the United States has done much to promote peace and prosperity in the hemisphere, we have at times been disengaged, and at times we sought to dictate our terms. Barack Obama. Number four, apology for Guantanamo speech in Washington, D.C., 52109. There is no question that Guantanamo set back the moral authority that is America's strongest currency in the world, said Obama. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime, have you? President Obama's incessant public apology served to undermine America's standing in the world. Clearly, Obama is embarrassed by the fact that we're the world's lone superpower. At the core, he's conflicted because he's been brainwashed by certified America haters. While Obama eats international humble pie, we at home are starving for a president who affirms the greatness of our industries and accomplishments, who celebrates our generosity and sacrifices on behalf of those who are suffering around the world, and who is quick to commend our exceptional servicemen and women fighting for freedom. Yes, a leader who inspires our patriotism, not berates us into pauperism. Instead, we get a limp-wristed, quisling of a president who bows to other world leaders. Remember Obama's embarrassing bowing down before King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, an Islamic monarch, and on a second occasion, Japanese Emperor Akihito? How about the bowing before Chinese President Hu Jintao, this time in the nation's capital as world leaders gathered for the nuclear security summit? Obama couldn't have picked a more inappropriate time or place in which to genuflect before a communist leader. You know, there's not another book in the market that's written as well, nor as succinct, nor right on target. I'm telling you, there's no better book. For an American president to bow is beyond bad decorum. It reveals his agenda to quicken America's decline as a world superpower. This usurper is fixated on making us the laughingstock in every corner of the world. Make no mistake, Obama's unlimited fault-finding with America impoverishes all Americans and weakens the American spirit. Evidently, the words of Reverend Wright struck. It's not God bless America. Indeed, Barack Obama is doing a first-class job remaking America into a third world nation. But he isn't pulling off his radical socialist transformation by himself. He's getting little help from his Marxist friends. For years, Barack Obama, Bill Ayers, and Louis Farrakhan all lived within two blocks of one another in the Hyde Park suburb of Chicago. It appears this cozy proximity with fellow agitators served as a leftist incubator of sorts, although Obama is dismissive about the fact that they were neighbors. I don't have to go into this Ayers story. We try to warn you and you didn't want to pay any attention to it. Instead, you said, ah, come on, that's nothing. And you know about his czars, Ron Blum, pay czar Kenneth Feinberg, science czar John Holdren, former White House communications director Anita Dunn, who loved Mao Zedong, the man who murdered 60 million Chinese. Let's not forget that John Holdren, Obama's science czar, sat on the board of editors of the radical left-wing rag, Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. In that capacity, he edited or wrote for the same propaganda sheet as communist sympathizers. Why am I not entirely surprised to learn that the magazine's co-founders, Leo Szilard and Robert Oppenheimer, were, quote, accused of passing information from the Manhattan Project to the Soviets? That's reference 51. According to a report, in 1994, Pavel Sudoplatov, a former major general in Soviet intelligence, named Szilard and Oppenheimer as key sources of crucial atomic information to the Soviet Union. In other words, they were traitors. With regard to smuggling U.S. atom bomb secrets to the former Soviet Union, Sudoplatov explains, the most vital information for developing the first Soviet atomic bomb came from scientists engaged in the Manhattan Project to build the American atomic bomb, Robert Oppenheimer, Enrico Fermi, and Leo Szilard. And the man Obama picked to be a science czar worked for the same publication as these communist sympathizers. Either Obama is totally incompetent to have made such a blunder, or he knew full well what he was doing. Both options are unacceptable. This begs the question. Now, I'm going to pause here. You'll know that the hemorrhoid has picked up on the czar thing from me about a year ago, which is great. I'm glad he's doing it. But nobody goes into the bigger question. And this begs the question, why did Obama pick socialist czars? Did he pick any patriots? Did he pick any fans of George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or Ronald Reagan? No. Instead, he picked outright Marxists and lovers of Lenin. Two of them are thankfully gone, Van Jones and Anita Dunn, because they were exposed for who they really are, not because Obama wanted them gone. Czar by czar, Barack has put into place a far-left infrastructure. You may ask why there's so much divisiveness in America. You don't have to look any further than Obama and his czars. They're the ones who brought this division to America. If Mr. Lenin Light was merely a Democrat trying to push liberal reforms and doing it in a legitimate way, yeah, there'd be disagreement, but there wouldn't be this much rancor. There's a real counter-revolution going on against the Leninist-Marxist revolution coming out of the Obama administration. That's why the Tea Party movement is picking up steam. And that's why even the left is starting to ask questions. You get it? You get it? 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. It's all in trickle-up poverty. Sacramento, Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm calling because I was going to Borders here to pick up your book. And I walked in, I was looking around for the book, couldn't find it. A guy, store workers, comes up, and he's like, can I help you? And I'm like, oh, I'm looking for Trickle Up Poverty. And he's like, oh, you're one of those. And I kind of looked at him blank. And he's like, well, we're not having the book until Tuesday. You know, come back then. And I was like, all right, whatever. I'm coming. I'm walking out the store, and he stops me. He's like, oh, look, somebody misplaced a book. I got one. So I was able to get the last book in the store, and he's like, congratulations, because you're the only one all day that's been able to find one. So it's kind of funny.
Well, you know, I understand how embarrassing it is to meet such lowlifes as this. Most of these people who work in the bookstores are good people, but there are some really rotten tomatoes, Scott, and it's unfortunate that they think that their job goes beyond merely selling you a book that they didn't even have anything to do with placing there, Scott. It's indicative of what we're facing in terms of censorship throughout our society, don't you think? That when even a lowly book clerk will think that they have a right to editorialize against somebody's choice of a book? What kind of country are we living in when these clerks tell you that you're one of those kind of people? I think that's quite insulting myself, Scott.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, in my head...
Scott, are you a younger guy?
I am. I'm 28. I think I'm young.
But what motivated you to spend the money to go and buy a book? I'm very curious. You know, the economy is bad. Why would you go and buy this book? What were you hoping to find in it, or what do you hope to show? Who do you hope to show the book to?
Well, you know, I was listening to the show on the way home from work, and I was like, hey, I'll stop by. You know, I was listening to the show, you know, and it intrigued me, the stories you're telling. What really caught me was the rules of engagement. I hadn't heard that.
Are you former military, Scott?
No, I'm not. I'm not. But
you're probably shocked to believe that our men can't fire until they're fired upon. That they can't even chase anybody who put an IED in the road unless they see them doing it. That they can't conduct any surprise missions. I'm sure most of America is stunned to learn these are the actual rules of engagement that have been put down by Obama and his communist czars.
And you know what? I was actually planning on buying two books because I was going to give one to my brother. You know, I was like, man.
Well, I'm going to give you a free one right now. Stay on the line. You're getting a free copy. Thank you very much for putting up with that snot nose. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When this doctor speaks, people listen. He is simply one of the most popular radio talk show hosts in America. And he has the prescription for what ails us. The one and only Dr. Michael Savage joining us on San Diego Living. Dr. Savage, good to see you.
Thank you very much. It is truthfully a pleasure to be with you because I know San Diego is almost my hometown in terms of loyalty of audience.
Well, and in terms of your latest book here, Trickle Up Poverty, too, it really focuses in on some issues here in San Diego, namely our military and our borders. Talk to me about those two issues.
Right. When I say trickle-up poverty, obviously it's the economy stupid kind of thing, right? We learned just this week that President Obama has added more to the national debt in the first 19 months than all presidents from Washington through Reagan combined. So you say, okay, we know that. What else is new? Well, let's talk about the military. I don't have to mention the border problem in San Diego. When you've got a federal government taking the side of a foreign power instead of the side of the American people, A, we're in trouble, and B, we don't know where to turn. But let's look at the military. I have a whole chapter on saving the military. What do I mean by saving the military? I say Obama is defunding the military. I also call for increasing the salaries of active combat troops. I don't hear that coming from any politicians out there. But perhaps the most controversial thing in here, Mark, is why are we in Afghanistan? You know, Mr. Conservative, you'd think I'd say go get him. Go get who? Our government won't even name the enemy, Mark. The guys don't know who the enemy is. And then when they do engage the enemy, if they do so a little too forcefully, they get a court-martial. Somebody's bothering me here, Mark. He knows he's on. Well, he wants to come up.
I think I know what you're referring to here. As I listened to your show yesterday, you were really wrestling with how to market this book, how to bring this book to the public. And you were thinking about two different approaches, the fire and brimstone approach, and then maybe just let Teddy sell it for you. Is Teddy with you?
I brought him. He's been in the studio. He's been hanging out eating yogurt parfaits, pizza, bagels. But I say, I don't know if you're going to believe this. This is the first of all the shows I've done today where he's actually come up on my lap because he's dying to meet your audience. So here he is.
The one and only Teddy.
Here he is. And Teddy, the mascot of the Savage Nation, has one thing to say, okay? Don't roll over for Obama. And don't let America go to the dogs. I don't think that that's so unusual.
No, it's not. But I understand the problem that you were grappling with at the top of the show yesterday. Because, again, you came on with fire and brimstone yesterday, and then you paused and you said, wait a second. Maybe you don't want to hear this. Maybe you would just like life to be wonderful and sweet and nice. And it's not that way.
Mark, you know that that's exactly what I face every day in the radio business. It's a very difficult thing to understand, which is how do people really want to hear you, your message? Sometimes you can get so impassioned, the women get scared, to be frank with you. The
sure.
Guys like the anger. They do. But I found out that a lot of women won't listen to a man who's angry. It's absolutely true. So if I do the softer approach, the Teddy approach, and I talk about the trickle-up poverty, which is real, but I come up with solutions, maybe I'll get people to read the book who normally wouldn't. And truthfully, Mark, it isn't about making me rich. This book was scheduled to be released just now, just before the election. I want to shape the outcome of the election. I'm praying that the people go to the polls informed. And I have an architectural plan. Let me talk about the economy, if I can, for a minute.
Sure.
China. Tariffs on Chinese goods. Not one politician is calling for that. I call for tariffs on Chinese goods. Why? It's not a level playing field. When they're paying $1 to $5 an hour, and we're paying $15 to $50 an hour, how can you compete with that? It's okay to say I'm for free trade when it's truly free trade, but you can't compete when you're paying slave wages in China. The only way to stop them from decimating our industrial base any further is put tariffs on Chinese goods. America is the greatest manufacturing nation on earth. It can be restored. I'd like to see the factories rebuilt and the factories running again and put the American people to work. We can do it. Tariffs on Chinese goods is the first good step.
Now, the book is incredibly detailed in the amount of documentation and the amount of real knowledge that you put behind these opinions. But the basic premise is pretty simple, and that's that the middle class, really, is under attack, trickle-up poverty. The middle class is going to be impoverished before you can blink an eye if we continue on the same path.
That's who pays the bills. It's the middle class. The poor don't pay taxes, so they're not paying the bills. The rich have all sorts of tax schemes, by and large, not all. I'm not a poor man. I pay a lot of money in taxes. But we're talking about the people in the real power structure. They have ways of receiving money, through earnings, through their corporation, where they're paying 15%. This is by design, Mark. People don't want to hear this. President Obama is a lifetime left-winger. He's a lifetime Marxist. I don't have to mince words. The guy has hung around in colleges all his life where the middle class, meaning the bourgeoisie, has been the enemy.
believe people around them have targeted the middle class. They're not helping the middle class, because if they were, I wouldn't be talking right now, because Obama would be more popular ship because they see that they're hitting an iceberg in a month from now. Why is the Democrat Party about to go down? It's because they've attacked the very source of the income for the whole United States of America, which is the middle class. We've got to turn it around. I have a 37-point program in trickle-up poverty. I can't give all the 37 points, nor would I expect you to want to hear them all. But those points are valid points, not only on economic issues, but also on social issues. The Republicans, in their plan 2 weeks ago, didn't mention one social issue. How can we be in a country without any social leadership?
Well, I'll tell you, folks need to go to their bookstore today. Trickle Up Poverty is out there today. They need to walk up to the counter and they need to say, I need a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. And they need to put their hand out and expect that the bookstore will have that on hand. Am I right?
If they don't, then somebody should get fired, because this book should be in every bookstore in America today. It's the last roll of the dice for me, and I hope it's not the last roll of the dice to save America.
Well, he was very nice. That was one of the best interviews I've done. It was a station in San Diego. Now, at the risk of your displeasure, I want to run a 40-second piece on the 11-city video tour I did. I was then patched up earlier, actually, to Cincinnati, WCPO-TV. And this is about the Tea Party in clip 17. I'd like you to hear it.
GOP just put its arms around the Tea Party and its candidates and say, all right, you're part of us now?
If they don't, they're going to be out of business, because the Tea Party really isn't a Tea Party. It's the conservative base of the old Republican Party that walked away from the Republicans when the Republicans started walking over to the Democrats. So when you say Tea Party, you're talking about your neighbors. These are average working Americans who've said enough is enough is enough. We want fiscal responsibility. We want tariffs on Chinese goods. We want the war in Afghanistan to come to an end, because we don't know why we're fighting it. It's commonsensical. It's the true grassroots movement that everyone has been waiting for, and here it is. These are ordinary people, Tanya.
Well, I'll tell you what. It is provocative to talk to you and to listen to you.
All right. Well, that was it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you'd like to call about your bookstore experience, we'd like to hear it. We are sending them on to my publisher tomorrow, and I believe that some clerks are going to hear very strong things in the next day or two from management at Borders. And as far as the positive goes, we're getting great reports out of Barnes & Noble. I don't know why we're getting such negative reports from Borders, but I hope that these are the exception, not the rule. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What do you want me to do? Read you from the book? Or you want me to take your calls? Do you think it's worth reading? Do you want to read the book? Do you want to spend other people's money like Obama? Do you want to hear about what the relationships are to previous socialists like Obama? You know, I just read an article by David Axelrod. A news appearance was given by Axelrod and Eli Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor. And I was shocked to read that Eli Wiesel said that something extremism, anyone who opposes Obama, it's dangerous, it's like Germany. Is he out of his mind? The man has everything upside down. You mean the people are speaking up, so therefore we're fascist now? Don't you see the mindset of liberalism is insane? That any opposition to this juggernaut of criminality is considered fascism to them? I've made my point, and I'm going to make it over and over again. And I want to tell you all over and over and over and over again that you're living through. And until you stand up to the fact that you elected a revolutionary who is a very powerful, intelligent man, you're going to be in deeper trouble than you can imagine. Shall I tell you something about what Joseph Stalin did in the 1930s, the man of steel Joseph Stalin did, to the middle class in his country, in Russia? Stalin put his faith in the brilliant government bureaucrats in Moscow instead of in the farmers. He believed that the brilliant bureaucrats in Russia were smarter than the kulaks who actually had dirt under their fingernails. Does it sound familiar to you? And so Stalin's regime swung into action, enforcing the collectivization of agriculture. What does that mean? In the early 1930s, Stalin proceeded to steal the land from the people, ordinary men and women like you and me, arresting those who refused to go along with the program. millions of landowning or farmers, landowning farmers called kulaks, were exiled to distant corners of Russia. Many landed in Stalin's gulag labor camps, and more than 20,000 who resisted were executed. Yes, there was widespread resistance. And what was the fruit of Stalin's takeover of the farming industry? Russia experienced widespread famine of biblical proportions when the bureaucrats took over the farming. An estimated 10 million Russians died from starvation because Stalin's promise of government efficiency and increased output turned out to be nothing more than fiction, a product of Stalin's fertile yet warped thinking. In fact, the people who grew the grain were dying at a rate of 25,000 people a day. Did you know that prior to the Russian Revolution, prior to 1917, Russia had always been a significant exporter of grain? In fact, Russia was the most important grain exporting country in the world. But after Stalin's communist takeover and the practice of a state-controlled agricultural industry, Russia's grain export business ground to a halt. In fact, in order to meet its own needs a year later, Russia was forced to import upwards of 6 million tons of grain annually. This embarrassing situation continued until 1994, when Russian farmers were finally able to begin modest exporters, begun becoming modest exporters of grain again. Now, what does it have to do with Obama? It's about Obama's nationalization of General Motors. It's about anywhere the government takes over private industry, down through the ages. If you look at government-run industries around the world, very few of them are profitable. Take Airbus. It's run by a joint consortium, France and Germany, and several other Euro countries, and it's still dependent on government aid. These governments must keep pumping more money into the company to keep it airborne. Airbus, by the way, competes with our Boeing company, which has no such benefits as government subsidies. Boeing just produces a better airplane for a lower price, which, of course, customers want to buy. And so that's the fundamental difference between socialism and capitalism, which is the more power the government has, the less power you have. And so I go into the fact that he is not a revolutionary of the type that you would think Stalin. He is not a violent revolutionary. It's much different than that. He has set a better Marxist mousetrap. Did you hear what I just said? Obama has set a better Marxist mousetrap than Joseph Stalin. And so that's why many of you still don't know what is going on around you. You have to understand the road that he is on and how the head of state is leading you there and why this man is doing it. You still don't understand what you're facing here because the newspapers either don't know or they're complicit in their desire to see more federal control of every aspect of your life. And so from the auto industry to the banks and various financial institutions to Obama's plan to snatch expansive tracts of land, depriving the middle class of mining, farming, and cattle raising opportunities and commandeering the energy industry through his green socialism scheme of cap and trade, Obama is hell-bent on crippling capitalism through massive taxes and his bureaucratic state. His unswerving commitment to nationalize health care is nothing short of a power grab in which he hopes to co-opt and destroy one-sixth of the economy by any means possible, legal or otherwise. It's all in trickle-up poverty. You have to study this. You have to become more literate about the school of socialism that he is a part of. When Barack Obama was a young man at Occidental College in his sophomore year, he had a very wealthy patron. Did you know this? In Hassan Chandu. They had a wonderful big house where they threw lavish parties. Hassan Chandu was throwing the money around. Obama was dressed in the nicest, slickest clothes. I thought they were both wealthy. This is coming to us from John Drew, Obama's contemporary at Oxy. And he is talking about Obama's choice of a roommate, Mohammed Hassan Chandu, a wealthy Pakistani student. Did you know any of this? No, you didn't. Dr. Drew recalls going out to dinner with Obama and his roommate Chandu in Chandu's BMW while arguing for hours about the merits of Marxism and Leninism over drinks and cigarettes. And here's what he said. Obama was arguing a straightforward Marxist-Leninist class struggle point of view, which anticipated that there would be a revolution of the working class led by revolutionaries who would overthrow the capitalist system and institute a new socialist government that would redistribute the wealth. That's reference number 31, if you think I just made it up. Do you see the irony? On one hand, Barack Obama, a student who comes from a broken home and with no visible means of support, was living high on the hog, compliments of his rich roommate. On the other hand, Obama was arguing about the merits of redistributing the wealth to end class struggle. Doesn't that strike you as bizarre, if not downright hypocritical? He and Marx had a lot in common. Both suffered from a severe case of class envy, coupled with entitlement mentality. Each wanted the good life, neither wanted to work for it. Both were happy to sponge off someone else. And so it should come as no surprise that when Obama's patron saint pulled out of town, that was his cue to move on to greener pastures to find another sugar daddy. And here's how Dr. Drew saw it. It's on page 74. When Obama knew that Chengdu was going to leave Occidental College, he knew that the money supply was gone, the big house was gone, the parties were done, and he thought it was better for him to get the heck out of there and go to Columbia. Because Chengdu wasn't financing his lifestyle anymore, I don't believe Obama was ever able to create that same charismatic presence on the Columbia campus. Reference 32. Things didn't quite work out at Columbia as the budding Marxist Obama might have imagined. Upon arriving in New York, Obama sought out Sohali Siddiqui, a friend of Chengdu. Maybe he thought any friend of Chengdu would be able to offer him another gravy train to ride for a season. Turns out Siddiqui was no moneybags. We are both very lost, he said. We are both alienated, although Obama might not put it that way. He arrived disheveled and without a place to stay. After his free ride in California, Obama may have resented his poverty-stricken circumstances on the streets of New York City. I don't blame him. Who wants to live in a rat hole, especially after tasting the benefits of the good life, the parties, the fancy house and car, compliments of his college roommate at Oxy? Having lived in two vastly different worlds, one characterized by wealth, one marked by poverty, Barack the student couldn't reconcile the dichotomy these experiences presented. That's where he went wrong. So there it is. I mean, you want to read this? You want a real exercise in reality? You want to see how we got where we are and why there's such rancor in America? You think the people don't see it? They may not know the reasons they feel uneasy. They know there's unemployment. They know Nancy Pelosi with the hammer told them something. They're tired of the takeovers of GM. They don't like Obamacare. They see what it's going to cost and how the care is going to go down. But these things are just the tip of the iceberg. What's below the surface is the history of a man. And if you think that he's going to be sidetracked because of your discontent and because the rising power of the people, you are mistaken. He's saying, just bring it on. The more you antagonize me, the worse I'm going to be. Because he has a complex, you understand, which is also explained in Trickle Up Poverty. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I think, obviously, this is ultimately a matter for California voters. And what I'm saying is we don't have a decision made right now that I can tell you. But I can tell you this. I can tell you
Let's
our
stop
efforts.
You. You're listening to the head of Homeland Security, Big Sis Napolitano, who, when asked whether she would deport Meg Whitman's former housekeeper, Nikki Diaz, since they're claiming she's an illegal alien, she had the audacity to say it's a matter for California voters? What? I thought the federal government said that they have the ultimate authority over immigration issues. Don't you understand the lies that come out of this government at every turn? It's sickening. It really is really just sickening. That's all I can tell you. Let's go to New York City. Kathy's been holding a long time from WOR. Kathy, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Good evening, Dr. Savage. Yes, I went up front. I didn't see your book. And I asked the clerk, do you have Michael Savage's book, Trickle Up Poverty? So he was looking around, and then I saw him conferring with another clerk in store. She brings him into the back room, closed doors, and then they come out with one copy of your book, and I asked him, why isn't this up front? I said, it's supposed to be up front. And he said to me that they haven't had time to open up the boxes yet. So I just wanted to report that to you.
Wow. Kathy, do you see what's going on here?
It's incredible. It's unbelievable.
Would you actually believe that you live in a country where books are being hidden and suppressed by clerks in bookstores because they don't like the politics of the author? Would you believe you're living in a world like that?
No, I cannot. I would never have thought I would have lived this long to see this happen.
Well, I can assure you that well, I remember when Republic Aviation used to be there. I went to an air show when I was a little boy. I still remember to this day the guy. They were World War II pilots after the war doing an air show for us kids and the adults who went out there. It's a beautiful area, Kathy. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty, so stay on the line. Las Vegas, Jay, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mike. Today I went into Barnes & Noble to pick up my copy of Tup, and they were out. So I went across the street to the Borders, and before I even had a chance to get inside, I hear my name called out, and lo and behold, it's an old Marine Corps friend of mine I haven't seen since boot camp. We got to talk, and he mentioned that they were out inside there, and even though it was a bust as far as getting the book is concerned, we had a reunion, and that...
Isn't that something? You know, I got to tell you, the Marines know what I've been trying to do for the poor guys who have been falsely accused. And during Fleet Week this weekend, there's a Marine reunion. I'm not a former Marine, but they love me. And they've invited me to one of their dinners. And it's really one of the greatest honors I've had in a long time, Jay, to just be around those men. I mean, I feel as though I'm amongst giants. Jay, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Chicago, here's a positive story. Mary Jo, you experienced something different. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. I stopped in at my local Borders up here in Mount Prospect.
Yes.
I walked in. I was looking for the book. One of the sales clerks came up to me, and she said, could I please help you? And I said, yes, I'm looking for Michael Savage's. And she got a big smile on her face. I said, Trickle Up Poverty. And she said, we sold out within a couple of days. So we're hoping that we get our next order in this.
And wait, what chain was this, Mary Jo?
Borders.
So here's a good Borders story.
Yes, excellent.
Oh, you see, so it's only a few water, I don't know what they put in there. It can't be fluoride, Mary Jo. It's fluoride's put in the water across America. There's got to be another explanation. Maybe it's the cappuccino.
We have Lake Michigan water here.
Oh, that's even worse. You're getting a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. You have time for a few more calls, and I'm going to get you all on as many as I can. Let's go to the city we talked about earlier. No, Atlanta. Brian, you're next up. Atlanta, Georgia. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, my quick story. I'm a truck driver, so I wasn't able to get home on Tuesday. I had to wait till Wednesday, and it was like 4 in the morning. So instead of going home, I just went to the parking lot and went to sleep in my truck for wait for the doors to open. And it was at Borders, and I had to wait like 20 minutes until the so-called manager finally said, oh, I think we have a copy of it and on our back in our new release cart. So it wasn't that bad, but wasn't that great. So I
hear you. Well, Brian, I really appreciate the loyalty I'm getting from Americans. It's astounding. You know, you're getting a free copy, Ryan, for your friends or whoever you want. Before we close this hour out, I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is the result of a lifetime of work. And it's so reassuring to hear that people are so loyal to me and to my message that they're willing to wait all night to get a copy of this book. I don't know how else to put it. This is awesome. It's a rejuvenation for me. I got to tell you right now, it's a total rejuvenation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, today President Obama said the Republican takeover of Congress would mean hand-to-hand combat. Gee, I hope he's not referring to his private army, Beowulf. I hope he doesn't mean that. We also read that dozens have fallen ill at an Obama rally. I don't know what that's all about. Were they, the Kool-Aid was tainted or what? Beowulf,
either that or they just got sick of what they were hearing.
I think the Kool-Aid must have been government-produced, like a flu shot, outsourced and manufactured in India.
That would account for the poor quality.
3 dozen fall ill at Obama rally in Maryland. Prince George's County Fire and EMS spokesman tells WTOP, numerous ambulances have been sent to the rally after people started fainting and became dizzy. The problems could be related to warmer temperatures today. Brady says crowds at the rally were outside and packed shoulder to shoulder. Wow. Maybe it was fainting from his greatness.
It was sort of like a revival meeting or something like that.
The president still spoke despite the health issues in the audience. He implored voters to be ready to fight in the upcoming elections. Maybe that's where they fell. It sounded like, you know, a revival tent.
Hallelujah.
I think if Jimmy Carter was there with some snakes and strychnine, maybe, you know, he could have passed around the strychnine jar.
Well, as soon as he gets out of the hospital, maybe he'll join him on tour.
He's better now. He's on his book tour. He sold 800 books so far in 8 weeks. Biden attacked his audience, and he said, you're the dullest audience I've ever spoken to. 89,000 stimulus payments went to dead people and prisoners. And that's why Michael Savage's trickle-up poverty is right on target. 89,000 stimulus payments went to dead people and prisoners. You hear? Stopping Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security, it sounds almost prescient, doesn't it? Gallup says the unemployment is actually at 10.1%. An official says the USA could absorb a terror attack and bounce back. You hear this? You hear? We could absorb a terror attack and bounce back. Isn't that wonderful to hear?
Great to
that's
know.
That's what you call a real powerful statement. Michael Leiter, head of the National Counterterrorism Center, said that there's no guarantee that we're going to have a perfect batting average. And he said we can definitely get attacked and survive it. I think that's wonderful. Now, the reason he's saying that is because he's a coward. I have no words for these people. You know, you do know I'm going to mention the book, I've Got to, Obama's War on the Military and the National Security. This is unbelievable to me. This is exactly what I said in the book. There's no way for me to tell you that here we have President Obama spending trillions of dollars on ineffective, wasteful economic stimulus packages and trillions of dollars more to socialize health care, and is hoping to pass some sort of costly cap-and-trade measure. But he doesn't think twice about making America more vulnerable in trimming the defense budget. I mean, what's more, we didn't hear a peep out of Gates and Mullen when Obama surrendered our anti-missile defense shield in Poland and the Czech Republic, or when Congress cut back on funding for future combat systems, an essential program that enables the U.S. Army to modernize its equipment and strategies. We didn't hear a word of protest from them over the recently announced almost 20% cut in the dedicated forces they could allocate to respond to a weapon of mass destruction attack on U.S. soil. Let me repeat that. We didn't hear a word of protest from Gates or Mullen when Obama announced an almost 20% cut in the dedicated forces they could allocate to respond to a weapon of mass destruction attack on U.S. soil. Listen, we're talking about our very survival as a nation. Why won't these men stand up to this radical president who continues to impoverish the military and compromise the ability for America to defend itself against those who would wipe us off the face of the earth? Make no mistake about it, Beowulf. The trickle-up poverty here is the weakening of America's capacity to defend ourselves and the impoverishment of the fighting spirit, which was once the centerpiece of the U.S. military. Why? All because of the mental disorder of liberalism exhibited by the far left's influence on the top brass and Barack Obama's radical policy of appeasement. One of the clearest examples of the Obama administration's efforts to undermine our military is the new rules of engagement, which are killing our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, literally. And I have the rules of engagement, Beowulf, for today's show on page 264 of trickle up, and people are not going to believe them because I want them to read them. I'll read them later, okay?
No, they'll be disgusted.
But to go back to a top U.S. security official in the news saying they can't give us a perfect batting average and that we're going to get hit and we can absorb a terrorist attack and we're going to come out stronger? Can you believe reading this, Beowulf?
I wonder if we can bounce back from the whole Obama administration. That's probably a greater threat.
Yeah, I wonder. We could probably more quickly survive another 9/11 faster than what these bedbugs have done to us. You know, wherever you turn, you hear another appeasement. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Do I have anyone to talk to when I have a bad day? Who do I talk to? When I bend over and I hold my head and I say, Lord, why did you put me in this position? How can I go through another day of this, trying to awaken the naive, childlike American people to the danger they are in? I've done it for 16 years. Give me some help, Lord. I don't go to a shrink. I don't need the government to come and help me. I talk to my dog. I look at a seagull. I throw bread to the water. You know about throwing bread on the waters? You know what that's all about? Where does that come from, throwing bread on the water? You're supposed to cast away your sins. Any stale bread I have, I feed the gulls. I'm trying to show my dog how other animals exist that don't have feet, four legs, or fur. Some have wings. And some fly. They have big beaks. And he watches them come swooping in. By the way, they call a seagull, incidentally, a rat of the sky. I don't see them. I think they're gorgeous. I've watched the seagulls all these years on the bay. They teach their babies better than the average mother in America that I've seen. I've never seen anything like it. A pelican mother is better than most of the mothers that are on welfare today. I've never seen anything like this. You ever seen a pelican mother sit and watch television all day long? You ever seen a pelican mother sit and wait for a handout from somebody? Have you ever seen a pelican mother let their young die without eating? Have you ever seen a pelican mother break their child's head open on a radiator because it cried? You never saw any of those things. I get my strength from nature. To me, nature is as close to God as I've ever come. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let me do this for my own sake. I started reading about the puppet masters in my chapter, Nightmare on Wall Street. And the most important part of that chapter should not be forgotten. And that is that $10 trillion of America's assets disappeared in 2008. And what I wrote was there was an agenda lurking behind the shadowy dealings. Is it a coincidence that this happened right before the presidential election? And I say hardly. Where did those dollars go? They didn't disappear. How many times have I told you that the dollars didn't disappear? They ended up in the hands of a relatively small number of people and companies whose purpose was far more nefarious than merely making profits. The raiders who trashed our markets sought nothing less than to use the control they had gained over our financial system to put a wet-behind-the-ears leftist president in office. Moreover, they leveraged that power to create a government run on socialist principles, but controlled by a small group of wealthy investors who dictate policy to the puppet president they elected. In effect, they pushed us further along the path to a socialist oligarchy. That's a paragraph from Trickle Up Poverty. I am telling you, it's true. I verify it with facts. And I name some of the puppet masters. In my opinion, the Managed Funds Association, a group of hedge funds investors with whom Soros is affiliated, lobbied SEC Chairman Christopher Cox to have the rules changed. Now remember, Christopher Cox was a Republican. And why did they do it? They did this to engineer a raid on U.S. markets to trigger a financial crisis that they foresaw could turn the election in favor of their 08 candidate, Barack Obama. This time the strategy worked. So they allegedly manipulated the marketplace. And I say those who manipulated the marketplace are free. And some of them did so, and they're now denying they did so. But I said there were hundreds and hundreds of minor players involved in this fraud as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, there are very powerful interests behind this. And of course they're going to disparage me. I know for a fact that right now they're buying bloggers to go online and put down Michael Savage and put down the book. They are threatened by this coming out. It's not just rhetoric that I have. There are facts in it. Many of you don't want to read the book. So let me go on. Let me talk about the uptick rule that was eliminated under the last administration, and the uptick rule that was eliminated by Obama, and who did it and why they did it. During Christopher Cox's term at the SEC, the uptick rule in the stock market was eliminated on July 6, 2007. The rule initially adopted in 1938, this is so important for you to hear, 1938 was one of the primary reasons we were able to recover from the Great Depression. This uptick rule limited short sales to stocks whose last trade was higher than the previous one. The uptick rule meant that traders who sell short could not cause the market price of a stock to drop continuously at a precipitous rate. Once the rule was removed, and it was removed in 07, naked short selling was enabled, and the circumstances were ripe for a raid, such as the one that occurred in 2008. This is in the chapter called The Puppet Masters, or Nightmare on Wall Street. Let me read you another paragraph. I know it's hard for many people to listen to this. Mark-to-market accounting standards were implemented on November 15, 2007. And look, I'm not going to read it to you because when you read it, it's hard for people to follow it. I know radio as well as anybody who's ever done radio, and I can tell when you don't want to follow it anymore. All you got to know is I have the facts in here, and that's why they're trashing the book. They don't want you to understand what went on. They don't want you to see this, and they don't want you to judge for yourself. If it was just a book, hawking a book and putting down the president, I really wouldn't be going on and on about it. Everything is at stake, okay? You think that that market crash occurred by accident? You're mistaken. The situation is exacerbated by Mary Shapiro, who replaced Christopher Cox when he resigned from the chairmanship of the SEC in 2009. Shapiro, along with Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, has long been a supporter of mark-to-market accounting practices. Investors in the stock market fear the potential for the same risks that severely damaged the market in 08 and are reluctant to get back into the market as fully as they might. Banks are reluctant to assume the risk of lending to businesses, especially small businesses, because of the risk that Shapiro will reinstitute some form of mark-to-market rules for banks and other financial firms, again causing them to mark down their assets and precipitating another liquidity crisis like that of 08. The result was what appeared to be an economic stalemate until early May of 2010. Are you listening to this? Here it comes. On the afternoon of May 6th, the Dow Jones Industrial Average plummeted 998.5 points. In a matter of minutes, the largest intraday drop in the history of the Dow. As usual, commentators and analysts missed the mark completely when trying to unravel what had happened. Some speculated that a trader had mistakenly added too many zeros to the number of shares he was selling and triggered the fall. Others blamed the Greek debt crisis and the underlying weakness in the euro and the EU's approach to the financial woes. Still others blamed the rise in electronic trading for causing the drop. While there was certainly some validity in the last two, in fact, the immediate trigger of the sudden sell-off in May of 2010 was very likely a raid by short sellers on the stock market. Are you listening to me? Disclosed in trickle-up poverty. Now you know why it's being disparaged all over the web by those who don't want you to get the truth. First of all, the precipitous drop occurred shortly after 2:30 in the afternoon. That should have been a clue to those trying to figure out what had happened. As Nelson D. Schwartz and Louise Story explain, well, I can't read everything in this book. You understand I'm excited right now? I go to this point. That in itself points the finger directly at short sellers. In fact, the May 6th drop was quite possibly the work of hedge fund traders raiding the market with the intent to send the message that they could still do whatever they wanted, despite the fact that only days earlier, a new, quote, alternative uptick rule had been put in place. They demonstrated clearly that the new rule had no teeth whatsoever, that traders who staged the raid were free to do what they would do for the remainder of the afternoon. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? It's the hedge fund traders who are controlling the economy right now, and they've got the politicians on strings. And I say to you this, this is as un-American on the face of it. This is un-American on the face of it. What has occurred over the past several years is a power grab of epic proportions, and no one in Congress is even close to understanding what happened and what a dangerous position we're in. From a high of more than 14,000 October 07, the Dow Jones average had lost nearly half of its value by the time of the 08 election. Much of the lost money went into the pockets of the hedge fund raiders, who, thanks to changes permitted by the SEC, were able to sell short with no limits, further driving down asset values. SEC is giving in to those lobbying on behalf of the MFA. Of course, millions of average Americans invested in the stock market and in money market funds through their 401k plans, as much as half the value of the assets they had planned to retire on. The raid made Bernie Madoff look like a piker. By the way, SEC also looked the other way where Madoff was concerned. Page 87. By the time John McCain correctly called for Cox's resignation as part of his bumbling response to the financial meltdown that cost him the election, it was already too late. In his response to McCain, Cox disingenuously said, quote, "We have no tolerance for naked short selling, close quote. Despite the fact that under his leadership, that's precisely what the SEC enabled. Reference number 8. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you think this is just hype, if you think it's just a book with empty pages in it, if you think it's just another puff book with a talk show looking to sell a book and get rich quick, I welcome you to read this book and refute it. You want to go and listen to the junkie on HBO who smokes dope every night on Sunset Boulevard in one cheap... Listen, there's so much I could say right now. You want to listen to these facile lunatics on television who think they're so smart because they read words written for them by comedy writers? Go ahead. Listen to them if you want. Or if you want to read the facts and you want to challenge these shysters, go ahead. It's all in my book.
Savage.
A story that was all but ignored by the mainstream media told us about the FBI inviting an imam with ties to Hamas to a top-secret counterterrorism center for a tour. Can you believe this? I can. Joining us now from Act for America is Brigitte Gabrielle. Brigitte, welcome back to the Savage Nation. How did this happen?
Can you believe this, Michael, that 9 years after September 11th, we have the FBI still with its head buried so far deep in the ground, it is not realizing what it's doing? We have Ben Bradley, who is a reporter with the WLS-TV Chicago, posted a story on 9/26. The story was about FBI escorts known Hamas operatives through our top-secret National Counterterrorism Center as an outreach to the Muslim community. You would have think they would have learned a lesson after CAIR becoming an unindicted co-conspirator. It took them 7 years to cut off their relationship with CAIR. But here's the problem. Bradley even put he was a part of this tour, and he even included an FBI photo of the participants. Kifah Mustafa, who is an imam of a mosque in Chicago, was a part of the VIP tour of the National Counterterrorism Center. Mustafa is an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest trial ever that our government took against an Islamic charity funneling money for terrorism overseas.
No.
They actually handed down 108 guilty verdict in that trial. So Khilaf Mustafa was number 31 of the unindicted co-conspirators. He actually posted one of the most pointed questions at the tour. He wanted to really find out. He pushed the agents to fully explain everything from the Bureau's use of deadly force policy to racial and ethnic profiling. He said, after he was interviewed about the tour, he said, "I saw a very interesting side of what the FBI does, and I wanted to know more." You bet he wanted to know everything about the FBI's policies. This guy is a registered agent of the Holy Land Foundation Chicago office. This is the same Holy Land Foundation that was tried by our government. In 2004, the Chicago Tribune story tagged his mosque as a hotbed for support for Hamas. Illinois State Police dismissed him from its chaplaincy program in June.
Why?
Because he failed a background test. As a matter of fact, when somebody from the Department of Homeland Security was interviewed about this guy, the man from the Department of Homeland Security said, without revealing his name and his identity, he said, "Plugs had to be pulled on our system to clear Hamas operative to tour the top secret NCTC facility because we have him on the highest watch list we have." Yet the FBI didn't do their due diligence. They could care less, and somebody behind the scene allowed him to get into the tour.
What did you do when you found out about this infiltration?
Well, we were so upset. We sent a national email to our membership, to the Act for America membership, on Wednesday, 9/29, with the details, urging our members to contact the FBI and national security and national headquarters. Because as you well know, Michael, we are all about citizen activism. We are all about grassroots activism. What we do in our website is we give people tips and tactics as to how they can become a voice affecting their community and our nation. So here we gave them something to do. We said, here is the phone number for the FBI, and here is the phone number for Congress as well. Not only you should call the FBI and question how something like this could have happened 9 years after September 11th, but you make sure you call your members of Congress and explain to them what happened and ask for a hearing and an investigation. So hundreds of our members did, and within an hour of sending the email out, we started getting emails and phone calls into our national office. The FBI officials denied the story, of course.
Well, of course.
Some even berating the people who called some of our members. The people who answered the phone at the FBI said that the story was a lie. It was a fabrication. Two people told us that the official they talked to at the FBI spoke, you know, they berated Act for America. They told the people, oh, you know, this is Act for America. That's a hate group. One of our members even called our office and talked to Act for America's executive director, Guy Rogers. And after he told her that the story is absolutely accurate, he assured her the story is absolutely accurate because we know our fact-checking. We have done our fact-checking. She then called and talked to a supervisor in the Chicago FBI office who also said the story was untrue. We had one of our staff members call the FBI the second day. The official he talked to said that the story was fabricated and the photo must have been doctored. So we put out a follow-up email on Thursday that repeated the facts and included how the FBI officials were denying it. In short, FBI treated Mustafa, this imam, this shady character, better than they treated the concerned patriotic Americans who called them about it.
You think the FBI ever came clean on this story?
You bet they did. After a Fox story posted on Thursday about the same time our email went out, because we have a lot of reporters who receive our email, FBI spokesman admitted to Fox News that Mustafa was on the tour, but defended it, saying he's a prominent member of the community and he's never been convicted of a crime. So now, Michael, the, quote, gold standard for access to top secret counterterrorism facilities is not being convicted of a crime. This is what we have come to at the FBI right now. We have provided this information to key members of Congress, and thousands of Act for America members have been contacting Congress, insisting that an investigation be done to find out why someone like Mustafa would be invited on such a tour.
You know, it's been 9 years since 9/11. I don't think the government has learned very much to protect us.
No, they have not, Michael. When you have people like Al-Awlaki, Imam Al-Awlaki, or Al-Aryan, or Al-Amudi, and many others who were treated like exemplary moderate Muslims and leaders in their communities and invited to the White House and other prominent places, only to find out later that they were leaders of terrorist organizations we are fighting, you would think we would have learned our lesson by then about doing our fact-checking and being careful, but obviously we have not. Because as you know right now, every single person that I mentioned, Al-Awlaki right now is the head of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Al-Aryan is convicted because he was the head of the Islamic Jihad in the United States. Al-Amudi is now serving 29 years sentence for an Al-Qaeda plot in prison. Look at Shahzad yesterday and his attitude, even at the sentencing. Shahzad, the guy who wanted to blow up the bomber of the Times Square plot.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a man who was considered the perfect moderate Muslim, educated, working in finance in New York City, living in the suburb with a family, running in his own community every evening, just like your average American, you know, dressing in Western attire and looking Western. Yet this man, Shahzad, is on a holy jihad to destroy America and kill Americans, and even is so proud of it. The American judge looked at Shahzad yesterday and told him, but you took an oath as an American, pledging allegiance to the United States. Shahzad looked at the judge and said, I lied. I said it, but I didn't really mean it. This is actually a good opportunity for me here, Michael, to discuss the law of taqiyya in Islam, something most Americans do not know anything about.
What is that?
The law of lying in Islam to advance or protect Islam. We in the Judeo-Christian faith, no matter, even if we are atheists, we do not believe in the Bible. we cannot put our hand in the Bible and swear an oath and lie straight to our face, because we look at a holy book as a holy book and we say, you know what, I'm not going to swear and lie laying my hand on that book. There is something deep down inside of us, even culturally, as Christians and Jews, who will not abuse that holy book. However, under Islam, under the law of taqiyya in the Quran, a Muslim man can lay his hand on the Quran or any other holy book and say a lie, swearing that he is telling the truth, even though he is knowing that he is telling a lie, and know that he is forgiven by the Quran, that he is protected by the Quran, that he is even rewarded by the Quran for saying a lie in order to advance Islam or protect Islam. So when we have Muslims in the United States swearing that they are telling the truth and nothing but the truth, they can lie through their teeth whether they are swearing on a Bible or on a Quran.
Wait a minute. This is unbelievable to me.
In their mind, the Quran commands them to lie in order to advance Islam. So when you have jihadists who are bent on committing terrorist attacks against America, or even coming to the United States, becoming naturalized, and wanting to become Americans in order to advance Islam in the United States, they can lie through their teeth and we would not know anything about it. And this is why we must understand the Islamic principles of war in particular, and we must understand the mentality of these jihadists. We must study them. We must know how they think, how they operate, and what their goals are, and what their links are to other terrorist organizations overseas in order for us to protect ourselves. And this is how you end up with people like Shahzad, who looked so westernized, became naturalized immigrants, became naturalized American citizens, and yet be able to try to kill Americans and look at the judge during the sentencing and be so proud of his actions without any remorse whatsoever.
What can we, the people, do?
First thing, become educated. And you can do that by listening to radio shows like this, like yours, Michael, and also by going to our website, actforamerica.org, and signing up to receiving our action alerts. A lot of our members, because of our pressure on the FBI and our members bombarding the FBI with calls, as well as bombarding members of Congress on Capitol Hill, asking how can such a thing happen. Due to these calls to Congress, we now have three key congressional members who already wrote the FBI asking for an explanation, and some of them are now talking about holding hearings about this lack of security at our top secret terrorism counter facility. Now, this happened because a lot of people signed up to our emails and we were able to reach them. And this is why I emphasize for people to sign up to our emails and action alerts, because we want to be able to reach you when something this important happens so you can become a voice affecting your community and our nation. Instead of the FBI getting 500 calls, we want the FBI to get 3,000 calls. Instead of Congress getting 1,000 calls, we want Congress to get 5,000 calls. Our philosophy, Michael, is this at Act for America. If our elected officials are not going to see the light, we are going to make them feel the heat. So, for those of you who are listening, if you are frustrated listening to this story and wanting to do something about it, go to actforamerica.org and you will find so many ways you can become a voice affecting your community and our nation.
Well, thanks for the update, Brigitte.
Thank you so much, Michael. It is such a pleasure being with you. Have a great weekend.
I don't think we're safer now than we were before 9/11. I believe the Obama administration has done nothing to increase our security or safety. In fact, as I lay out in Trickle Up Poverty, this government's attack on our borders, economy, and security have actually weakened us immensely. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There are some fabulous new reviews of the book. I'd rather not read them because I think that we're going to hear them in this hour, a couple, aren't we, Beowulf?
Absolutely. No, there's some really strong reviews, and some really smart people are reading your book and giving it rave reviews.
Well, it's encouraging. I haven't written a book like this in a long while. Here on MichaelSavage.com, the website, you can see Teddy finally, and you can finally see what I look like in real time. It's from my TV show the other day, Don't Roll Over for America, Don't Let America Go to the Dogs. It's a seven-minute television piece from a station in San Diego. Frankly, I think Teddy looks great. And he's gotten many, many, many offers for movies, but I don't think I'm going to let him do it. Obama divides races according to the latest poll. Dems turn on Obama over Iraq, Afghanistan, and Egypt. 1 in 4 Democrats want a repeal of Obamacare. $162 million in stimulus funds are not disclosed. Let me repeat that. $162 million of the stimulus funds have gone missing. Stopping Obama's attack on our borders, economy, and security. Trickle-up poverty. Hello. Working-class whites shun Dems. Well, it's about time. Interesting article about Obama's euthanizing of the Fourth Amendment, where he wants to clamp down on the Internet. There are many other stories. Obama's use of FOIA's tax records reviewed. A federal inspector general is looking into whether the Obama administration used confidential taxpayer info in an effort to attack a political opponent. Huh. A governor candidate, my favorite governor from Texas, Governor Perry, has said to editorial chiefs of the major newspapers, I don't need you. Now, candidates for high political office usually grovel for newspaper endorsements. Not Texas Gov. Rick Perry. Puppy thrower off hook. The puppy-throwing Bosnian girl seen in a video chucking the helpless animals into a raging river will reportedly not face any charges. No comment. A black judge in Pennsylvania rejected a plea deal in a criminal case after he accused the prosecutor of only offering deals to white boys. He's a black judge. Isn't that nice? Man wearing Obama mask robs store. I'd like to buy one. Not to rob a store. Maybe I could do a show in an Obama mask. Babe, well, if you think that would be fun.
You'd have to.
Why don't
we
all put on Obama masks one day and see if the show's format changes in any way?
Hey, Halloween is coming up, Michael.
You know, I was thinking about Halloween, and I changed the word. I said it's not Halloween to me. It's Halloween. H-O-L-L-O-W.
A Halloween
maybe,
of the country.
Maybe a Halloween to you, but it's a Halloween to me. Halloween, Halloween. You like that, Beowulf?
Very nice.
To some, it's Halloween. To some, it's Hallowed Ween, right?
Yeah.
To me, it's Halloween.
We've definitely seen a Halloween of the country.
It's a Halloween, Hollow evening. I can't get behind it. Do you put up all of that stuff for your kids, Beowulf?
A little bit here and there. We don't.
I know. My son said,
edge.
Dad, how can you attack Halloween? I said, I don't really attack it. I mean, why get so excited? You know, it's like a national holiday. It's bigger than Rosh Hashanah for the Jews or what's the thing for the Muslims?
Eid or Ramadan?
Eid. Something to rat.
Yeah, we take them around the neighborhood.
Bigger than Easter for the Christians.
It's becoming that way, although
bigger than Easter for the Christians.
Both of them, I think, have become about high fructose corn syrup primarily, though.
It's like a haiku of corn syrup, I agree. No, that's what sacred holidays have become, high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, well, they go around the kids, they get the candies, but then we keep the candies so they don't get overloaded, and we trade them in for other things so that we preserve their health at least.
How can liberals with mental disorders be treated? Is there a medication? Or in fact, is this show, The Savage Nation, the best therapy? Listen to Big Sis Janet Napolitano, the head of Homeland Security, as she talks about illegal immigrants and the deportation of the California Republican candidate for governor, Meg Whitman's former housekeeper.
You know, I don't know the answer to that
question.
What do
you mean you don't know the answer?
I think, obviously, this is...
You're the head of Homeland Security. You don't know how to deport somebody?
Obviously, this is ultimately a matter for California voters. And what I'm saying is we don't have a decision made right now.
Well, let's repeat that again.
A matter for California voters. And what I'm saying is we don't have a decision made
right now. When did deporting illegal immigrants become a state decision?
This is ultimately a matter for California voters.
Now it's a state decision, not a federal decision? It's obviously not so in Arizona.
I can tell you this. I can tell you that our efforts over the past 19 months have resulted in more people being deported who've used bogus Social Security numbers.
Bogus Social Security numbers?
I will assure them that we will look at this very seriously.
Yes, right. But what about the real problem? The illegals who are coming in here and committing violent crime and drug running, why don't Why doesn't the government take care of that? Now, here's Hillary Clinton being asked about Bill's diet.
Madam Secretary.
Here we go again, the puff pieces.
Let's start off with something that I've been wanting to ask you since July. I was in South Africa at the Fortune Global Summit with your husband, and he looked so trim. And he said, that's because you and Chelsea were forcing him to eat tofu.
And there's
is that
laugh,
true?
That famous laugh.
Well, no, it's not true, but... But there's truth in it.
Wait, stop. There's probably more truth in that than in a lot of the nonsense Hillary speaks. Okay, go on.
But there's truth in it. I don't know. Somebody would say it's got truthiness. no, I mean, I think he decided that he wanted to, really get in shape for the wedding. And so he, in response to... our urging, really embarked on what became a very successful diet.
Unbelievable. Some success at last for the Clintons. Savage.